Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today is September 11th, 2025, and we are digging into a really fascinating stack of sources today. They paint quite a vivid picture of the AI revolution that's, well, unfolding right now. You've got everything from these colossal infrastructure deals to how AI is changing your shopping habits, believe it or not, and even some surprising shifts in the global tech landscape. Our goal, our mission for this deep dive is to cut through those daily headlines. We want to find the real-world impact, the crucial insights. We're going to help you understand not just what is happening, but really why it matters to you.
It's moving incredibly fast, isn't it? What's fascinating here, looking at these sources, is how quickly AI is shifting. It's moving from, cutting-edge research labs to being deeply integrated into business, into consumer applications, everywhere. And that's creating both, well, immense opportunities, but also some really intriguing challenges. Let's unpack this.
Absolutely. And let's start with that foundation, the infrastructure piece, because there's some incredible news here. Oracle seems to be making a truly monumental play. We're talking about a $300 billion cloud deal with OpenAI?
Yeah, $300 billion. I mean, the number itself is staggering. But if you connect it to the bigger picture, it really reveals Oracle's dramatic surge. They're diving headfirst into the picks and shovels part of this AI boom. They've apparently secured something like $455 billion in future AI infrastructure contracts. That's huge. OpenAI's deal alone, that commits them to around $60 billion annually starting in 2027. So this isn't just about big numbers. It's fundamentally about who owns the compute power, the foundational power for the AI future.
And here's where it gets really interesting, right? This rise apparently sent Oracle founder Larry Ellison right past Elon Musk, briefly anyway, as the world's richest person. His net worth jumped over $100 billion in a single day.
Wow!
Oracle projects its cloud infrastructure revenue will grow from $18 billion this year to an eye-popping $144 billion within 5 years. And you said most of that's locked in.
Locked in, yeah. Which is remarkable. But, this raises a really important question. Why is OpenAI diversifying its cloud providers? They've got Microsoft Azure, a huge partner. Why bring in Oracle and Google, too?
Good question. What's the thinking there?
Well, it points to a strategic need, almost certainly, for just massive distributed compute power. Huge scale. And possibly it's about mitigating reliance on just one partner. That makes sense, especially when you see initiatives like the $500 billion Stargate project that's aiming to build whole new domestic data centers. Hmm. They need compute everywhere from everyone, it seems.
And it's not just these, the absolute titans duking it out. We also saw Nebius, another AI infrastructure company, raise $3 billion, public and private offerings.
Right, Nebius. And that raise came right after they announced a multi-billion dollar deal with Microsoft, a multi-year agreement reportedly worth $17 billion over 6 years to deliver AI infrastructure to Microsoft.
So Microsoft is both a provider and a customer in this space.
Exactly, which shows you the complexity and the sheer demand. What's fascinating here is how quickly these infrastructure deals translate into market value, into capital raises. The Nebius founder and CEO, Arkady Veloz, he explicitly said the Microsoft deal will accelerate their AI cloud business. He signaled massive demand coming from, and this is a quote, leading AI labs and big tech companies. They all want dedicated capacity.
So the demand for this basic infrastructure, the compute power, is just off the charts.
Off the charts. It suggests even with Oracle and Microsoft scaling up massively, there's still not enough to go around. That opens the door for companies like Nebius to grab significant share very quickly.
Okay, so that's the foundation.
Yeah.
Massive investment, huge demand for compute. But what does this all mean for, for you, the everyday consumer? Turns out AI is increasingly getting into your shopping cart. There's a new report showing 61% of consumers are now using generative AI tools like ChatGPT for commerce. That's nearly triple the figure from just 2024.
It's a huge jump in just 1 year, and it tells us something important about why people are using it. The data suggests it's not just novelty. Consumers aren't just playing around with AI for shopping. They seem to be driven by, economic necessity. Money concern.
Inflation still biting, maybe?
Seems likely.
Yeah.
With ongoing concerns about inflation, 54% use AI specifically to compare prices. 41% use it to find deals. So it's really about saving money. And interestingly, trust in these AI recommendations is very closely tied to financial incentives. Like 75% would trust AI recommendations if they got cash back, and 86% trusted if it provides clear money-saving benefits.
So AI is becoming a sort of automated bargain hunter.
Pretty much. It's becoming almost a trusted financial advisor for household budgets, and that could potentially shift brand loyalty, away from traditional marketing or brand affinity towards just whichever brand the algorithm says has the best deal today. That's a big shift.
a really interesting implication.
Right.
Okay, but then there's the other side of AI, the content it learns from. This has been a, let's say, contentious issue. Now, major web publishers, Reddit, Yahoo, Medium, are mentioned they've just launched something called Real Simple Licensing, RSL. It's a new protocol, trying to establish payment terms for AI companies scraping their content.
Yes, RSL. And this is trying to tackle that really thorny question. How do content creators get paid? Paid for the data that fuels these huge AI models, much of which has just been scraped for free up to now.
So how does it work, technically?
Well, it builds on the old robots.txt file standard. You know, the file that tells web crawlers what they can and can't access on the site. RSL extends that. It lets publishers specify licensing payment options. Could be free, could be pay-per-crawl, maybe other models. It's sort of modeled after royalty organizations in music like ASCAP and BMI. That's the idea. Anyway.
Right. Trying to create a functioning marketplace.
Exactly. That why it matters here is that it's an attempt to create a scalable system. AI companies could get legal clarity, hopefully, and sites could finally monetize the content that's been, well, fueling the AI revolution for free. But, and this is a big but, enforcement and adoption. Those are going to be difficult hurdles, huge challenges there.
Yeah, I can see that. Getting everyone on board globally. Tricky. Now, shifting gears slightly, maybe more philosophical, OpenAI's Sam Altman made this observation that people are starting to talk like AI, making some human interactions, quote, feel very fake. What do you make of that?
That's a fascinating and maybe slightly unsettling observation. It points to the subtle, maybe, but profound impact AI might be having on our actual communication styles as we interact more and more with AI chatbots, content generators, just seeing AI text online. It's not just AI learning from us. It seems we might be, perhaps unconsciously, mirroring its output.
How so? Like adopting its phrasing?
Possibly. Think about the typical AI language, often quite structured, a bit formal, maybe less nuanced or idiosyncratic than messy human speech. If that style becomes pervasive, influences how we write emails, how we talk, does it homogenize our language? Does it strip away some of the, you know, the personality, the spontaneity? It raises important questions about authenticity and how we communicate.
A subtle shift with potentially big consequences down the line.
Could be. And on a related note, thinking about AI's impact, especially on younger users, we also saw a new safety assessment labeling Google Gemini as potentially high risk for kids and teens, which just highlights again that critical ongoing need for responsible AI development, for safeguards, especially for vulnerable groups.
Absolutely critical. Okay, let's broaden the lens beyond just AI for a moment. Other tech developments are pushing boundaries too. Elon Musk's Starlink, for example, the plan is apparently for it to become a global carrier, offering a single solution for home broadband and direct-to-cell service. This comes after a deal to buy radio spectrum from EchoStar.
Yeah, the Starlink ambition is all about ubiquitous connectivity. Internet and cell service basically everywhere. To make it happen, though, SpaceX needs to launch a whole new generation of cellular Starlink satellites. And phone manufacturers would need to add support for specific radio bands. That whole process could take maybe about 2 years.
So it's not happening tomorrow.
No, definitely not. And there's quite a bit of skepticism, too. Industry analysts, even AT&T's CEO, have questioned whether the spectrum they bought from EchoStar is actually enough for dense cities, you know, where demand is highest.
Right. So maybe not replacing city networks entirely.
It seems more plausible, according to analysts, that Starlink might need to partner with existing mobile network operators in those dense areas rather than trying to compete head to head everywhere. It's a huge strategic play. Could change global access, but the path, especially in cities, has real technical and logistical hurdles.
Okay, switching from space internet to robots on the ground. China's Ant Group is showing off its new R1 humanoid robot. There was a demonstration recently. It was cooking shrimp at a tech show in Berlin, and they're apparently testing it for roles like a caregiver or maybe a robotic tour guide.
Right, the shrimp cooking demo. Demonstrations like that are certainly eye-catching. They show progress and dexterity in controlled environments. But it also kind of highlights the gap that still exists, the gap between a cool demo in a lab or at a show and a robot that's actually practical and commercially viable for widespread use.
What was the issue?
Well, another video from the same event reportedly showed the R1 placing a box, but doing it at a, quote, glacial pace. And Ant Group hasn't given a price or a launch date. That glacial pace isn't just a funny detail. It points to the really hard problems in robotics, things like real-time perception, complex motor control in unpredictable settings, navigating safely and efficiently. These are the same big challenges that, you know, Tesla's Optimus and other humanoid projects are wrestling with. The ambition is there, but truly useful humanoid robots for everyday tasks. Still a major engineering challenge.
Still a ways off for practical home use, it sounds like. Okay, here's one that definitely caught my eye, maybe for a different kind of user. Luxury travel. Uber is apparently adding helicopter and seaplane rides to its app, starting possibly as early as 2026. This is through a new partnership with Joby Aviation and Blade.
Yeah, this is fascinating. It's an expansion into very premium on-demand mobility, clearly catering to a specific high-end demographic. The idea is you'll be able to book a seat on a scheduled helicopter or seaplane trip or even charter the whole thing right in the Uber app.
Where is this starting?
Initially, it looks like areas such as New York City, the Hamptons, South Florida. Makes sense. But also, routes mentioned include Aspen, Los Angeles, and Las Vegas. It definitely indicates a growing market for high-speed, point-to-point travel, especially for bypassing traffic in congested areas. It suggests a future where urban air mobility moves from sci-fi concept to, well, a luxury reality for some. Raises interesting questions, too, about city infrastructure, landing pads, noise, that sort of thing.
A whole new layer of transport, potentially. Okay, fine, now let's zoom out. Let's look at the economic geography of AI. Where is this boom actually happening? The Bay Area's dominance is still, well, staggering. San Francisco and San Jose together capture 13% of all U.S. AI job postings, which is huge considering their size. But a new Brookings report reveals an unexpected challenger is emerging on the East Coast.
That Brookings report is really interesting. It challenges that narrative of AI being purely a West Coast thing. Yes, the Bay Area is dominant, no question, but Washington, D.C. now accounts for 6.3% of AI job postings. That's just barely behind the individual Bay Area metros like San Francisco or San Jose.
Wow, D.C. That's surprising.
It is a bit surprising, but maybe shouldn't be entirely. The entire East Coast corridor, really, from D.C. up to New York, it's quietly become a really formidable AI cluster. It houses about 30% of all AI startups. Half of those are in New York, but the rest are spread across D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia. Philadelphia alone, get this, had over 10,000 job listings that required AI skills last year.
What's driving that East Coast surge?
It's likely a mix of things. Government contracts, especially around D.C., strong universities and research institutions, and just a deep existing pool of tech talent that's now adapting and skilling up for AI roles.
So a significant shift, or at least a broadening of the AI map. But the report also has a warning, doesn't it? About frontier hubs and broad hinterlands pattern.
Right.
It says more than half of the 387 metro areas they looked at fall into the bottom two readiness tiers. They lack basic AI talent pipelines, research infrastructure.
Exactly. And this is where the broader implications really become clear and quite concerning. This pattern creates what the report explicitly calls an AI divide.
Mm.
Now, you'd think generative AI, because it's relatively low cost to access, should democratize things, spread opportunity.
That's the theory, yeah.
Right. But the report found only modest diffusion of AI activity beyond these primary AI centers, these frontier hubs. And this isn't just an abstract economic concept. It means real consequences for communities, for individuals. If you live in one of these hinterland cities or regions, your access to the latest AI-driven services, your job opportunities in AI, your region's ability to attract those future industries, it could all be seriously limited.
So it could actually make regional inequality worse.
That's the major risk highlighted. It could exacerbate existing regional economic inequalities, creating lasting economic consequences, and basically morphing the old digital divide into a new, potentially deeper AI divide.
That's a really sobering thought to end on. This deep dive has certainly shown us an incredibly dynamic landscape today. I mean, from the almost mind-boggling scale of those AI infrastructure investments to the subtle ways AI might be changing how we talk to each other. And then this uneven distribution of AI opportunity geographically. It's a world really in flux.
Absolutely. What really stands out is just how quickly the future seems to be arriving. It's becoming the present, and often in ways that are quite unpredictable, impacting everything from, you know, who the richest person is down to how you find deals when you shop online.
So thinking about all this, what does it mean for you, the listener, the learner, as we move forward?
Well, as AI becomes this fundamental engine, the picks and shovels maybe of the new economy, reshaping pretty much everything, how we shop, communicate, where economic growth happens, it really begs a crucial question for all of us, I think. What responsibility do we have as users, as citizens, in shaping how this technology develops ethically? And how do we ensure that its benefits are shared more broadly rather than just concentrating wealth and deepening those divides we talked about? That seems like the critical challenge ahead.